Hey everyone, Sarah here. The episode you're about to hear is part of a fun host swap we're doing with the wonderful ladies of the Edit Your Life podcast. In today's show, you'll hear Asha Dornfest and Megan talk about raising siblings. And then later this week, I sit down with Christine Coe over on Edit Your Life to talk about work-at-home productivity hacks. Make sure you're subscribed to both shows, ours and the Edit Your Life show, so you don't miss these episodes. Okay, on to the show. Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 212 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, and this week I'm here with a very special guest host, Asha Dornfest. Hey, Asha.
Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I am fantastic and really looking forward to our conversation. If you guys don't remember, or you think, I know that name, how do I know that name? Asha is the co-host of the Edit Your Life podcast, which we are huge fans of. But you and I also had a fantastic conversation not too long ago. It was episode 31 of Voices. So like a few months ago,
yeah,
where we talked about older kids, parenting older kids.
Well, this is a topic that I think we could pretty much talk about every day of our, you know, of our motherhood lives right now.
Yeah, we really could because we're both in it. But this week we're actually talking about siblings, and we're going to hit it from both kind of the older kid and younger kid perspective. I know that you said that you and Christine Coe, who's your co-host on Edit Your Life, and I should say that Christine and Sarah are going to be doing a swap as well. So they're going to have an episode in your feed of Edit Your Life where they're going to chat with each other. So we're kind of doing like a fun little, I don't know, it's like Freaky Friday around here.
It's sort of like a podcast sleepover.
It is. It's Freaky Friday, only it's Tuesday, and it is like a podcast sleepover. It's like just a big old pod swap happening. But you said that you had a question, or you often get questions from your listeners about introducing new babies into the household.
Yes, indeed. So we have, at one point we did a really, really interesting listener survey, and we also always invite our listeners to, you know, give us their questions and make suggestions for episodes. And one of the questions that we have gotten actually more than once is, how does it work when you introduce a new baby into the family, and how do you help older siblings sort of transition and all that sort of tips and wisdom stuff when it comes to a growing family?
Yeah,
so I'm very excited to talk to you about this because I feel like, you know, we have so many different perspectives.
We do. And you've got two kids. So you've seen it kind of play out in a two-child family, and Sarah's got three. So we talk sometimes about playing out in a three-child family, and I've got five. So we can talk about that as well. But we also get that question quite a bit. And we're also going to delve into how those relationships change and evolve and grow as the kids grow and as they become young adults and in some, you know, eventually move on in their lives and leave the house, which I know is something you're right in the thick of right now.
Oh, I'm in the thick of it. And I think one of the reasons I'm so excited about this conversation is that in different ways, both you and I can really speak to this whole trajectory from like the beginning until they move out. That's sort of an amazing, I'm a little amazed to find that I can even speak about that, but I can, and I think you can too. So I think this is going to be such a great conversation.
Here we are. It's come full circle, Asha. We've known each other since our kids were little, and here we are talking about them being grown up. So we done got old, right? I know. So I'm going to take a really quick sponsor break, and then we will get back here and jump into the conversation.
Megan, I am realizing lately, and wait for it, this is a big realization, the food that I eat happens to make a huge difference in how I feel.
What?
I know. I'm looking at 40 next year, and I just notice the difference so much more than I used to. But it's really hard to load up on the veggies and the lean proteins if I don't plan ahead. When I do plan ahead, it's a no-brainer. I love to eat that way. I just don't often choose it in the moment. So if you guys are with me, check out PrepDish. PrepDish meal plans walk you through the process of doing all your healthy meal prep at once for the whole week. When we do PrepDish, my husband and I are just so happy all week long knowing we've got meals in the fridge ready to come together quickly. Sometimes we supplement them with a kid-friendly side or something, but the work involved goes way down on those busy weeknights, and the nutrition factor goes way, way up. Prep Dish has gluten-free, dairy-free, paleo, and keto options, and they even have a super fast meal plan, which is so great for busy families. I usually look at the recipes Allison sends on Fridays and see which ones jump out at me, like this one, seared tuna with mashed sweet potato and asparagus, and then I print out that meal plan and prep instructions to do all the work on a Sunday. Allison is offering our listeners a free 2-week trial to try out Prep Dish. If you've been meaning to try keto or want some of those super fast recipes, or if someone in your family is gluten-free or paleo, you can't beat this deal. You're going to go to prepdish.com/themomhour to sign up. Again, that's prepdish.com/themomhour for your first 2 weeks of meal plans totally free.
We're so excited to be working with Save the Children this summer. It's an organization we both admire, and the work they're doing around kids and literacy right now is outstanding. Save the Children believes every child has the right to a basic education, but right now in our country, kids who live in poverty are starting school behind. 60% of them don't even have a single book to read at home. We know from the research that getting these kids caught up in language and literacy is key, and it's got to happen early. Save the Children's new effort is called Read a Story, Change Their Story, and it's designed to give moms like us, who are fortunate enough to have books at home and read to our kids already, a way to help kids in need. All you have to do is read with your little ones, log the reading time at savethechildren.org/read, and throughout the summer, generous organizations and partners will donate books to U.S. schools and support Save the Children's education initiatives with other resources. Now, you guys know we don't love keeping reading logs as homework, but we do love that this is an easy way parents and kids can do something they already enjoy with all the summer reading we're already doing, and then help others at the same time. If logging your minutes online seems hard, here's a tip. Set a reminder in your calendar for the last day of the month and plan to head to savethechildren.org/read and just give your best estimate for how much you've read. No need to be too specific about it. What matters is that you're reading and helping kids. And little bursts of reading really add up. 15 minutes a day, the time it takes to do a bedtime story, times 30 days will make it 450 minutes for the month of June. And knowing that the simple act of logging our reading is helping not only our kids avoid summer learning loss, but also a school and a family in need makes it totally worth it. Get started at savethechildren.org/read, and thanks so much to Save the Children for the work they're doing for kids and for sponsoring this episode. Okay, Asha, so we're going to start at the beginning of this journey, which, as we both mentioned, for us was a while ago, right? So I will just generally talk about my memories and experiences introducing new siblings, and then I'd love to hear yours as well, and then we can kind of talk about, I guess, what we gleaned from that. So probably the most memorable addition, there was two, there was one on each end, was the second baby and the final baby for me. The reason I really remember the second one is I was definitely the most stressed out about it. I remembered walking through Michael's craft store with my almost two-year-old, Jacob is my oldest, in the cart, and just having this very visceral feeling all of a sudden that, because I was hugely pregnant, that this would maybe be the last time he would get to ride in the front of the cart, you know, like the little with his legs down. And like he was just big enough to do that. And we were having fun and I would push him and like kind of lean in for his kiss. And like I just was a very silly mom in those days. I don't do that at the store with my kids so much anymore. But with my like toddlers, I was very silly. And like it was a lot of baby talk and just goofiness and interaction. And then suddenly I thought, next time I'm here, there could be a baby's car seat between us. Like, where would Jacob even be? And I couldn't in my mind wrap my brain around it because it had been just he and I for so long. And it was very emotional. And I really had a hard time kind of grasping that. Did you have anything similar to that that you remember?
You just caused an explosion in my head because I remember it very keenly. And my moment actually happened when, I should say I have two children, my son and my daughter, and they're a little, almost 4 years apart. So when my daughter was born, my son was almost four. So when I was at that hugely pregnant stage, I remember sitting on his bed at night, reading him a book and, you know, thinking about that. It was that same sort of precious solo moment that was just, it was just a moment of calm. And let me just say, there weren't a lot of moments of calm at that stage of his life and our life together. But I remember having that same completely poignant feeling. And actually, I felt very heartbroken.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a stranger in between us.
Yes.
You know, like, who is this imposter baby? Like, for a second, I just felt like all I could feel was this massive love for my oldest. And I didn't know the youngest
yet. No, this
is just
they're a blank. They're like a question mark.
Exactly. Yes. So I remember it well. I really do.
Yeah. And I remember feeling, just as much heartbroken for myself as for this sort of, I guess, these feelings I was really projecting onto Jacob. I really didn't know that he would feel displaced or upset or any of those things. But in my mom anxiety, my mom lizard brain, as I like to call it, like, that's where my mind went immediately to the negatives and what this was going to take away from him or do to him. On the flip side, I will say bringing my final, I knew by the time I had number five and, you know, she was a girl and it just felt like this bit like the girl at the end of the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. And I knew that she would be their last and in a way that I hadn't known with any of the others. And something about that felt very different. But that's the difference between once you've gone through something like bringing a new sibling into the house three times, when you get to the fourth time, you realize you're not imposing it on someone. And it's a gift. It's something that you're adding to the family, not taking away. So it was a very different experience. And I remember it very well, but like for a very different reason, right? It was like much more excitement and everyone kind of in the same, like everybody's just equally excited. And so I focused with Clara a lot more on the good side than I did with Isaac, unfortunately for little Isaac. But so let's talk about the reality of what that was actually like. So Isaac was born and my life went from very simple. Jacob was a calm kid. He was easy. We were buddies. Like we had our routines down and Isaac was difficult and loud, cried a lot, nursed all the time. And yet, when I think about the actual experience of bringing him into the family, I don't view it through the lens of taking something away from Jacob. And he never felt like a stranger. That's like the funny thing. Like that whole feeling like, oh, there's going to be this stranger between us never actually came to pass for me. How about you?
Well, so I think that's the thing. So first of all, two things. Number one, you said, you know, in your anxiety, you're sort of projecting all of these negative, like, oh no, what if, you know, what if they feel this way? What if they feel that way? And it didn't come to pass that way. So I think that's the first thing that I totally recognize in myself too. I had all sorts of what ifs going on in my head while I was still pregnant. But if I look back at that time, very few of those things actually happened. And then other things happened that I didn't expect it. So I think that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing I would say about the whole stranger thing, oh yeah, that completely went away when this little person was born, obviously. And again, it was just a sort of a little mental trick that my brain was playing on me. And I think let's just give ourselves a little grace. I mean, it's an intense time, both in terms of just the reality of transition, but also hormonally. I mean, the whole thing, it's so intense. And so, yeah, you know, by when it actually happened, the reality was so much easier. And also, you know, when you're in something, it's always easier than the anticipation. I mean, maybe it's not easy. That's not to say it's easy, but the anticipation's always worse. And
it is.
And in my case, my son, Sam, he was the challenging baby who didn't sleep and cried all the time. Mm. And my second, my daughter, Mira, was like Zen baby.
She had the opposite. Yeah,
I had the opposite. And so, you know, I think the reality of it was actually in fact, it turned out to be easier for me to have two kids than it was to have one, because somehow it just balanced out so many emotions that I was having about motherhood. And it actually simplified things, which sort of blows people's minds when I say that.
Well, it is
such an individual experience.
And everybody experience. There is no such thing as like the typical oldest. There is. Right. There's just no such thing. And like,
exactly.
Which one is going to be the hardest, you know, going from 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, they're all hard in their own way. But, you know, for me going from 1 to 2 was probably the hardest transition. And going from 2 to 3 was the hardest, like, realization. Like, this is when I throw my hands up and surrender. So, like, those are very different experiences. But if your first baby is really hard, that's probably going to be your hardest transition, because you're going from just you all the time, footless and fancy free, to not only being a mom, but being a mom with a really difficult or time, you know, like a baby who just needs a lot. So, yeah, it is so individual, and there's no predicting that, unfortunately. I wish we could.
Well, and hopefully that'll give folks some comfort listening to this. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things where you look around, you see what's going on with other people, and you think to yourself, why is my life so nutty and sort of out there. And of course, it's like that for everyone in different ways.
Yes, it really is. Like, what is it that if an expectation is met, like happiness is an expectation that's met. But right. Like so often those expectations are not met and then we have to mm-hmm. readjust our expectations. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the practical things. So you bring home this new baby, and even if they're not a stranger and even if it isn't something you've done to your child, which I think is something Sarah and I have talked about several times on this show, like a new baby is not something you're doing to your older child. It is a shift. It's a relationship. It's a new relationship that everyone has to adjust to. All that said, there will be some feelings, right? So how many did that
feelings.
Play out? Yeah, many, many feelings. And like, how did that play out for you guys? Mm-hmm. And kind of, I guess, lead us through, did any tips come out of that?
Yeah. It's funny. When I was spending some time before we started recording, really thinking about this, like really trying to put myself back in that place. And, you know, feelings. So one thing I really tried to do, and it was hard because it was, you know, the first time we were doing this, but what I really tried to do was to sort of release my expectations about what feelings were going to come up, both for myself and also for my son. You know, like, sure, it could be that he would be jealous and feel rejected. It could also be that he would fall in love with his sister and want to hang out with her all the time. Or it could just be like, whatever.
Right.
You know, detail that's not relevant to me. There's somebody else in the house.
It could also be all three of those things at different times.
At the same time.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was the first thing I did, was I really tried to release those feelings. And in our case, the way it worked out was it started out sort of neutral, then sort of just was a big roller coaster between positive and negative emotions. That's what it was for all of us. And, you know, and I felt guilty, and then I felt elated, and then I felt like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I felt, everything's going okay. I mean, it was just, there was a similar roller coaster like when my son was first born. I mean, it's a huge transition.
It is. I think that one thing, you know, it is really hard to acknowledge that all those different feelings can coexist, or just one of them might rise to the surface. And I think there's this tendency or urge to like talk a kid out of what they feel.
Oh yeah, totally.
And this is something I know that we're all guilty of wanting to do it many different times. Like, your teacher's not really mean. Like, you know, those things.
Yes.
Or whatever it is, whatever they tell us is the truth that we don't really want to hear, or we
right.
wish they felt something different. It's very tempting to try to talk them out of it. So I think there's other ways to reframe it, right? Like, you can allow them to express it. That doesn't mean they get to hit the baby. That doesn't mean they get to be hit you or lash out at you, but they can still have the feelings that they have.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the more we can sort of separate the feelings and the behavior, the easier it is. And so what I mean by that is that basically anyone can have any feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, feelings are just feelings. They sort of live in our minds, our bodies. Behavior, on the other hand, we have to have some really clear boundaries on. But I think that when a kid, or even when we allow ourselves to feel these feelings and talk about them and express them without this sort of shame and guilt around it, and at least be present for that feeling, while also being really clear, like, yeah, you know, you're angry. You wish this baby would, you know, stop crying, or would stop hanging out with mom, and you want to be with mom. You know, just reflecting it back, but yet being very clear about what the behavior expectations are.
Yeah.
I think that really helps. I mean, that helps probably shorten this period of like rough transition, you know, when there's room for those feelings.
And I think that you can commiserate a bit. I mean, I remember having conversations with, not just with Jacob when he was little, but even with the kids, all the kids as they grew older and we added more and more siblings to the house, like, you wish the baby would stop crying, right? Me too. I also wish the baby would stop crying. And then you have an opportunity really to build empathy. We're all here together. Mom's not just a robot who's just powering through because this baby is the most important thing in the house. Like, we're all important. And I think one thing that really shifted in our family dynamic, not right when the second baby was born, it took a little longer, but you start to realize that a family is a unit and things are done for the good of the unit over like any one individual most of the time. Sometimes mm-hmm. what's good for the individual is also what's good for the unit. But like there becomes that distinction that we're a family. We're mm-hmm. all together in this. And right now the baby's crying, but here's what we're going to do to try to work through this. And that's a lot for a 2-year-old to understand. But I think mm-hmm. the more we model that, the more like they kind of grow into it.
Oh, totally. And I think also using that language really helps, because if you think about it, you know, a family of parents plus a kid, I mean, really the focus is going to be on the kid, and that's the language we use. Mm. When I think about when you know, it was just my son, you know, we would talk about him a lot. Mm-hmm. And then, right, when my daughter arrived, we talked about our family. Yeah. And I think that even using those words, talking about our family, what does our family do? How does our family talk to each other? You know, our family's honest about things, our family, this and that, that really does start reframing things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this stuff all takes time too.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
I think that's the other thing.
Yeah. And it occurs to me that even if you were a one child family, that transition would start to occur as well, but it would just mm-hmm. happen differently. So mm-hmm. probably when little kids start to become a little less inwardly focused and can start to see needs around them and have empathy, that's when those conversations start to shift from you or I to we. And mm-hmm. when you add a sibling, you just almost have to start doing it sooner, or like mm-hmm. you have to do it really intentionally. Otherwise it is very easy for everyone to be kind of looking out for themselves. And that's very natural, by the way.
Right.
Like that's what 2-year-olds do. That's what children really do.
Yeah, no, that's really true. It's funny. I actually have a question for you.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, you know, I know that like this whole talk about language and stuff, did you have to really teach your kids positive ways to express their negative emotions? Like, did you have to be super intentional about talking about that? I mean, even like teaching them how to express their positive emotions? I know I did. I'm interested to know if you felt
that way. That's a good question. I think it really varied based on the kid. I had some who were just naturally very expressive. Jacob's actually a good example of that. Like he talked a lot. He talked about his feelings. Clara also talks about her feelings. Now, interestingly, Isaac, who was the second, to this day is a very reserved kid verbally. And he was kind of a holy terror physically when he was little, like he was really smart, and he had a huge vocabulary. He just didn't use it to talk about things. He didn't express his feelings. He threw things or hit people. That was how he did that. And then mm-hmm. as he got a little older and learned how to like say what he had to say, we saw him, his physicality become more controlled. Mm-hmm. So yes, to some degree, but it's not like a conversation you have once and they get it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's like over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's okay. Like you can say, I'm angry at you because you took this toy, but it's not okay to hit them and yank the toy away, or whatever the example is. And yes, there was a lot of talking and modeling. It just didn't happen with all of my kids the same way.
Right, right. You know, it's sort of funny. It occurs to me also. Now, we did not have this issue, but I know I've spoken to some parents who do have this issue, and that is that the older sibling, it's sort of like the other end of the spectrum. They love their new baby
yes.
so much that they like squeeze them really yeah. hard, and they want to pick them up
yep.
all the time, and they want to like
backs, yes.
like a little doll or something. Uh-huh. And so there's like teaching that has to happen on that end of the spectrum too, like how not to overlove their new little babies.
Yes. And that the baby is like its own sentient being, not your pet, right? Like not
or a
your
little
toy.
Doll, right? Yeah. To shove into like a little doll stroller or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
That's, did you have that dynamic with yours or?
No,
no,
no.
Yeah.
Definitely
you were
not.
Like, no,
oh,
that's
no, no,
said.
No. Sam, I think like Isaac, you know,
yeah.
he didn't express a lot of things with words. It was all about, yeah, there was the throwing stuff and yelling for sure.
Yeah.
That was sort of his way, but, no, that was not an issue, but I do know that it is an issue for some.
Yeah. I would say as I added more and more kids to the family, there was some of that. I kind of lucked out in that the older of the two groups, so mine came in, you know, there was two, there was Jake and Isaac, and they were about 2 years apart. And then there was a gap, about 4 years. And then there was to William and Owen, about 2 years apart. And then there was like a 3.5 year gap, and then Clara. Luckily, the older of the two sets, Jacob and William, were not super physically expressive with the, like, with the younger siblings. Had it been reversed, I could see how that would have been a problem, if that makes sense. But they were just like a little steadier and a little more verbally expressive, and not as like, I'm going to squish you. I will say, the more kids we added, the less the little kids seemed to want to do for themselves, like the babies, because they had so many little or big siblings doing stuff for them. Like Clara would barely crawl. She just kind of sat there and waited for people to carry her around.
Right. Someone's going to do it.
She really kind of had this expectant look on her face most of the time as a baby. She would just kind of sit there and like, yep, here I am being cute. So who's going to bring me over to that
toy?
Who's
got this?
Yes. And, you know, I remember even worrying about that a little bit. Like, is this okay? And honestly, it was totally fine. She did learn to walk because babies developmentally, they want to learn to do things. It's not like she liked being totally taken care of in that way. I think she just got a little bit used to it. It just made it so there was always someone there to pick her up and carry her or do something for her or whatever. So yeah, she came to it a little more slowly, but eventually she got it. And she also learned skills from that. Like, she really learned how to work this group of boys. She really learned her place and how to, I guess, I'm not going to say take advantage of or
how to operate in her surroundings.
Exactly.
Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yeah. And that's been a valuable thing for her to know. I think that's, it's been interesting to watch her grow up now and get older. So yeah, I think those dynamics, you know, there's no perfect, like, this is not a movie. It's not a textbook. If you add a sibling, so much of what's going to happen is based on ages, what kind of place you live in, where, like, what's your schedule like, what's their personalities like, what's the age gap? Like, there's so many variables, and you can't control for all the variables.
Well, that's true. And I think also, which reminds me, we should talk about sharing rooms.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm going to make a note to talk to you about that in a minute. But I guess, you know, what all of that is telling me is that, you know, what that allows for is just a little bit of deep breathing and going, okay, so you can basically take it as it comes, as opposed to having to map out some sort of perfect introduce new sibling strategy.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you can trust that, first of all, these are, you know, two or more very different people from each other, talking about the siblings themselves, the kids. And as you get to know this new sibling who's just arrived, you will start to understand how better to manage the relationship.
Yeah.
And in the end, it really is their relationship.
Yes.
You know, you as the parent can help, you know, by, you know, doing all these things that we're talking about, making room for feelings and, you know, sort of narrating how to talk about feelings and all that kind of stuff, setting boundaries for behavior. But in the end, it really is their relationship. And so that is a beautiful thing to actually watch blossom.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think that anytime you kind of, you try to come up with a strategy for how you're going to manage someone who doesn't exist yet or who hasn't, you haven't met yet, you're probably going to have to do some adjusting. So I like that approach.
Yeah.
Let's talk about sharing rooms.
Yeah.
So we never really had the option of not sharing rooms. The only time, let's see, Clara never shared a room because by the time she came along, we were just in a house where she had her own room. And, you know, the boys by that point were kind of off in their twosomes, right? Like two and two. But other than that, my kids always shared rooms. And it was just a reality, you know, like it just had to happen that way. So it did. And it was fine. I mean, it's not perfect. It's still not perfect. Two of my boys still share a room and they complain about each other's music and they complain about each other's alarm clocks and everything else. But it's just been such a reality that I've never really thought about it any other way.
I'm glad you said that because I think that, you know, that's a question for so many people, sort of like, do we need to get a bigger place? Do we need to do this? I think it's one of those things where in some cases it's just really not a choice one way or the other. And which sort of means that it's going to work however you do it.
It's like if you have the means or you want to move into a bigger house or you think that's the right choice for your family, by all means.
Yes.
But don't stress yourself out that you owe it like a birthright to your children to have separate bedrooms, because just because that's the way this culture has, you know, operated for the last maybe 20 to 30 years doesn't mean, like, I'm sure a lot of the people listening remember growing up with shared bedrooms, and certainly mm-hmm. our older siblings and our parents grew up with multiple kids in one room often. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just because the culture shifts doesn't mean you have to.
That's true. And I will say that my kids, we had this funky bedroom in our house that was sort of like a bedroom plus a dormer. And there was just an open little archway between the two. So no door between the two. And so the dormer room was just sort of like this little alcove, I guess you could say. Mm. So for the longest time, that's sort of how my kids shared a room. So a boy and a girl, you know, different ages sharing a room with separate spaces, I guess you could say. And so, but then when my son became, was he like a middle schooler, teenager? Now I can't remember exactly which year it was. We had enough bedrooms in our house. Like I had an office to myself and we had a guest room and we changed things around so that the kids could have their own bedrooms because we could do it. And it just felt like the right thing to do.
At that age, it does get to the point, you know, they probably would like a little more privacy and stuff.
Yeah, it worked out.
It's funny because Clara, there's like a joke that, like a recurring joke in the household that Clara's had her own room since she was a baby and never wanted her own room. And William's been wanting his own room since he was a baby and has never had it. So like the two of them are kind of like jealous of each other. And it's just kind of funny because like they always want what they can't have. Right. Yeah. I also remember when when I just had like a mass of little kids in my house, because at one point I had five kids under 11 or 11 and under in the house at once, that my bedroom became the place where solo time with mom happened. So it like there was no place in the house that I could go where there weren't multiple people usually, except I could invite the kids one by one into my room to talk to me.
Step into my room.
Yeah, step into my room. Let's have a snuggle. Let's talk about your day, blah, blah, blah. And so
that's actually really special. You know what I mean? That there is this sort of, you know, there's this protected space where that can actually happen.
And I had to think a little differently about how I felt about privacy. And there's no judgment there. If you want your bedroom to be a kid-free space, by all means. But for me, I thought, well, this is just the most practical way that I can create the environment I want to create for my kids to be able to talk to me. They know they can come in here and shut the door. And I'm usually in my room anyway, because I work in my room and I hang out in my room. Like I'm very bedroom focused. So it becomes like a haven. And so it's still that way. I can still tell them the kids want to talk to me. They hover around my bedroom door. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bet they have so many, like, they probably just have like these warm, fuzzy, unfocused feelings about that room.
Yeah.
Because of special time they got, you know, just with you. And I think it's sort of nice to think about that predictable solo time together. It may or may not be predictable, but you know, that solo time with each kid, it doesn't have to be a lot. It can just be a little bit. And I think sometimes when people are introducing new siblings to the family, they think, oh my gosh, like let's take the older one to Disneyland or let's take the older one.
Huge thing.
Yeah, right. Like it with some sort of implicit apology in there. Like, we're sorry that we have this new kid. We're taking you to Disneyland.
Yeah.
But you know, like even just a few minutes at bedtime, you know, where you just look into this little person's eyes and you really see that person for a second. Those moments really count.
Yeah, they really do. And it also doesn't, I mean, I know I've gone off and on of doing like special dates with one kid at a time. And sometimes that works with the family schedule and sometimes it doesn't. But one thing I've always been able to do is take one kid on an errand. And often that child, especially if they're kind of like 3, 4, 5, 6, kind of that butter zone where they're like not old enough to think it's a drag to be taken out of the house, but also old enough that you can have a real conversation. Those errands can be very special and you have to do it anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's another good way to kind of work those in.
Well, and I think in my case, I totally appreciated things about each kid more when I spent a little time with them alone because they were so different than the other kid.
Yep.
And it was like, oh, yeah, that's this thing about you.
I remember that.
That doesn't necessarily show up when we're all together as a group. And so those moments are great.
We are. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break for some sponsors, and then we're going to come back and talk about older siblings. So we've talked a little bit about introducing new babies. We've talked about helping those transitions with younger kids. But now we're going to talk about them as they get older. And this is really fun. This is one of my favorite parts of parenting. And I think something to look forward to and not something to be afraid of. So we will be right back.
All right. So we know that our little ones love to watch videos on a phone or a tablet, and that sometimes that's just what you need to get through the day you're having. But if you don't feel so great about algorithm-based video platforms like YouTube Kids, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Hopster. Hopster is a subscription app for kids 2 to 6, where kids can access high-quality shows, learning games, fun music, and more. Even preschool-age kids can navigate around without needing help, and they'll never see any ads or in-app purchases. I love that this content is hand-picked by Hopster's content team, and it's both fun and wholesome, so experts have already weeded out the junk so that you don't have to. It's beautifully designed. The images and the navigation, they just seem to be more soothing and logical, not kind of all over the place and jumpy like some kids' apps are designed to be. So we have arranged for you guys to try Hopster for an entire month for free. Normally, their free trial is just 7 days, so this is a really good deal. You're going to head to hopster.tv/register and enter the voucher code TheMomHour to get that extended 1 month free trial. Again, it's Hopster, hopster.tv/register. And enter the voucher code TheMomHour to get an extended 1 month free trial.
So recently I stumbled across a pair of simple gold stud earrings that were once my grandma's, and I realized, hey, I need some grown-up jewelry in my life. I really wanted a few classic pieces I would wear again and again, but that are quality enough that I might pass them down to Clara one day. But the experience of shopping for fine jewelry at a store has always felt intimidating to me, not to mention expensive. Our sponsor Ana Luisa makes it easy by offering high-quality, stylish jewelry that is much more affordable than what you'll find in a typical fine jewelry store. One thing I didn't know about the jewelry industry is that it takes 20 tons of earth mining to produce a single gold ring, so no wonder gold can be so expensive. Most brands won't tell you where their gold comes from, but Ana Luisa uses 100% recycled gold, so you don't have to worry about that impact. Also, big jewelry brands add on a huge markup, up to 10 times the cost of production. Ana Luisa eliminates the retail markup, so prices are much more accessible for the same high quality and genuine materials. In fact, Ana Luisa offers products from the same jewelers as Tiffany's and Louis Vuitton, and they are so confident in their quality that they offer a complimentary 1-year warranty on every product. I was offered a piece of jewelry from Ana Luisa, and I had been looking around for a right-hand ring that looks stylish but not cheap. I know that can be really hard to find. So I chose the stone ring in Palace Deep Blue. I love it. It's really understated but eye-catching, and I know it's going to be an everyday piece for me. Also, the packaging was really pretty and felt luxurious, so just opening the box was a treat. So if you're also in the market to upgrade your jewelry, we've got a great deal for you. Go to www.analuisa.com/themomhour and use promo code themomhour10 for $10 off your purchase. Again, that's analuisa.com/themomhour for $10 off your purchase. And we'd love to know what you got. Okay, so we're back and we're going to talk about some older sibling dynamics. And Asha, I know you have lots of thoughts about this, but I would love to hear your experiences and where your kids are now and their ages now and how things are, and just let us know what's on your mind.
Okay, great. Well, my kids. My son is now 19. My daughter is 15, almost 16. So teenagers, one's off at college, one's in high school. I want to echo what you said before the break, which was that this is one of the joy times of parenting. At least it has been for me. These older years and this time where these kids really have an established relationship, it has just been, those younger years are really hard for me as a mom. And these years have been so much easier as they've gotten older. So I will say it's so interesting because now the sibling relationship they have is at a distance since my son is in college out of state. So I have even sort of yet another little piece of this puzzle to talk about. As they got older, I think that as their capabilities became more and more similar and that age difference between them became less sort of glaring, their relationships improved. Mm. And so I found that there was a lot of tension when Sam was so clearly older and could do so much more than his sister. And he resented the fact that she wasn't doing the same chores he was, or you know, she was sort of the little kid. And so he felt like she got babied, although, of course, he didn't remember how he was treated at that
they
age.
They always have a very limited memory of those things. Yeah.
Which, you know, totally understandable. You know what I mean? It's, you know, and it's really funny. I think this actually, I'll share a detail about myself. I'm an only child. And so I do not bring my own lived experience to this whole like mothering siblings thing.
Right.
And so I think sometimes I was at a disadvantage knowing that. But as the kids got older and they could both reach stuff on an upper shelf or they could both lift something up and not need help, that really reduced a lot of the tension between them. That really, really helped. So which is not to say they don't argue or fight. They do. They have very different personalities. They don't agree about things. There were definitely for sure problems. I think there are problems in every family. Let's just say that out loud. But it really smoothed out in so many ways. And I would say like there's been an exponential leap now that he has moved out and is living his own life. There's a way to share that doesn't involve competitiveness. That's actually really lovely.
I love that. Well,
yeah. Yeah. What about your kids?
Yeah. So, well, we've kind of got like several that are in the process of kind of moving on. So my oldest is 21, then there's a 19-year-old, 15, 13, and 10. And it's been interesting because now the two biggest are bona fide adults. One is still living at home, one moved out, but they're both, you know, they both have their adult lives going on and they're both working and they're both doing their thing. And they kind of come and go as they please. And it's just been a little... it's been interesting to now see the other three function as a unit with where like the oldest two are floaters almost. Like they'll come in and they'll have dinner with us and then they're doing their own thing and they're not really expected to be part of the family unit the same way that we used to all be. And I really like it. It's like there's something missing but something gained at the same time. Another thing that I found that is more specific, I guess, to just parenting. You said something about this being your favorite time of parenting and how much easier it is for you. And I think some of that is because dynamics between the kids change, but I also think that the nature of parenting changes. I think now it's more emotional labor, and less like chasing toddlers around a playground type labor. And I'm better at emotional labor. So I could see where for some people, it would be actually more challenging as their kids get older.
That's very true.
I find it easier to deal with even a sibling argument when everyone can talk calmly and rationally for the most part, or at least express themselves. To me, that's 100 times easier than breaking up a fight between a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old who are like having the most irrational fight over a toy. And I'm like, come on, you know, like pull yourselves together. So like their problems have matured along them. Right.
Once again, it's like we said before, you know, there isn't a script for this.
Right.
And there are so many variables that we can't control. And in some families, little people, like when they're young, they're difficult and flailing around. And when they become teenagers, they mellow out.
And sometimes it's the opposite. Yes. True.
And some people get both. You know, like a hard kid and a hard teen, and some people get an easy kid and an easy teen. Like these are things we can't predict and control. So once again, it's a time to just sort of breathe and respond to the situation as it happens. And to, you know, but by the time they're older, you know these people better.
Right.
You know, that really, really helps.
It does. So yeah. I know you had mentioned things like responsibilities and chores. And I mean, how does that play out? Well, now in your house, it's totally different because you only have one kid at home doing all the chores. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about chores. Cause I feel like this was a big bone of contention between my kids. Right before Sam went to college, they both had different chores based on their ages and capabilities, which caused tension. But that was just sort of the way it goes. And then their chores became very similar. And then he left and now she does chores. Now, I will say our chore system is not perfect. It's not like I have cheerful children walking around, you know, like cleaning things up without being asked. I mean, this does not happen. And I think there are lots of things I could have done better when it comes to the chores. I will say that. And the thing that I would do if I could do it all over again is that I would give them all responsibilities starting as young as possible, you know? So including toddlers, I would just start giving them small responsibilities. But, you know, whatever, like we do what we do and we do the best we can and we can't go back. So now I think I just, you know, I just share chores as much as have them do chores as much as possible. But well, I guess that just the main thing is just that it got easier the more similar the chores were.
I think in our case, it's becoming, because that's also happening, it's starting to level out, at least with the four oldest. Like Clara is still kind of, she's 10. She has responsibilities, but they're just completely separate from what the boys are doing. Which doesn't mean they're always more desirable or pleasant. Like it's her job to scoop the litter box. No one wants that job, but she likes the cat. It's easy for her to get to all the stuff. Like I'm very practical minded about the way I hand out chores.
Yeah.
And so I think number one thing is this actually going to get done? I'm going to give them responsibilities no matter what, but if I'm going to give a kid a job that's always their job that needs to get done, then I need to make sure the right kid has the right job, I guess is what I'm getting at. And so I knew she would do a good job with that because all the supplies are in a place she can get to. It's nothing's heavy, blah, 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 blah. But with the older ones, I would say like between William, who's 15, and Owen, who's 13, it's starting to even out. Like the kinds of chores they do are starting to become more even. And what that's actually doing now is creating, it's kind of pulling into like a bright, harsh sunlight, how much better at chores William is than Owen.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yes, because when they were doing very different things, when Owen was just felt littler, when he was like a little boy and he was doing little boy stuff, and William was a bigger kid and doing bigger kid stuff, you kind of just, he kind of got a pass, right? Because he wasn't doing stuff that was on the same level. Now that they're doing chores on the same level, everyone knows Owen is like slacking. So it's been interesting to watch them figure it out. Like they will do a lot of that policing themselves.
If I
allow it to happen. Now the problem is that sometimes means everyone's stalling and nothing gets done. And then I have to step in and really ride Owen. But it's been interesting to watch that. The other interesting dynamic we have now is that Isaac is completely moved out, but he will come home on the weekend and hang out. And kind of doesn't often tell me if he's coming or going, like just shows up, wants to sit around, eat food. So he doesn't have chores anymore. And there's been a little bit of resistance when I've asked him to do something for me. And I have to be like, yeah, I know that you don't live here anymore, but I'm still feeding you and you're still using my electricity. And I bet you're going to take a shower here. You know what I mean? So like I have to kind of push back and he's never been a kid. He's always been a kid who would do the chore that he was asked to do, but never like super cheerfully. He just kind of did it when he got around to it. And I sometimes now have to be like, when I ask you to do something, it's just nice of you to do it. You know, like, I know you don't have to. I know you're an adult, but you're going to come to my house. You're part of this family still. Please just do the thing. And he will do it. But I do sometimes get a little bit of an attitude from him. Do you have that when Sam comes home?
Well, we're about to find that out because he's going to be coming home from college pretty soon.
Yeah.
Well, and I even talked to my husband about it. I said, we need to sort of get our story straight about, what his responsibilities are. But one thing I did do, which I feel quite proud of myself for doing, actually, was before he left for college, I really reframed chores. I said, all right, you know what? We're not talking about chores now. We're talking about move out skills. Now, let me tell you, you are going to be the most popular roommate ever if you actually know how to operate a mop and you understand how to use a, you know, washing machine, et cetera, et cetera. So I really talked about, you know, like what are the responsibilities and qualities of a desirable roommate? Who's the person that's just going to get the eye roll from all the other roommates because they do things like, leave their crap all over the table? So it was a totally different conversation than do this because it's part of your responsibility. It's sort of like do this so that you're a functioning adult. Mm. And that was way more compelling to my son.
I can imagine.
Way more compelling.
Well, it's compelling. And so, yeah. It's about him, right? It's not about what he can do for you. It's about even teenagers are self-centered. It's just the way it is.
It's not only about him. It's about how he's going to fare socially with his peers. And so it was a good thing. And I think I am hoping that we can sort of continue that when he comes home. If I have a feeling, if I were to predict right now, I would predict actually he's more open to doing chores. Now, this may completely reveal like how naive I am as a parent of a college freshman. The other possibility is that he just completely regresses and is like, oh, thank goodness I'm back home. I can just do whatever. So, you know, we'll see. We will see. Please tune in later.
He may have just gotten out of the habit. Like that mm-hmm. he may be so far removed from how your household runs because he's been so focused on this other thing for 9 months that it might be like literally retraining.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it funny how, I don't know about you, but I know for me, I am a 50-year-old woman. When I go back home to my parents' house, I find myself doing things that I did when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was a really good teenager, so it's nothing bad. But I definitely am like sitting around letting my mom do the dishes. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I really shouldn't do that anymore. Yeah. So there is something to be said for like old dynamics. So,
they do creep into your brain.
They rear their ugly heads. But, you know, something else you really just addressed now is that you have different kids who act differently and have different, skill levels.
Yeah.
We have to treat them differently even when they're older.
Yeah.
So is that's something that I have really, it was sort of obvious to me, but now that they're older and they can do similar things, I still need to communicate with them really differently about not only what they do around the house, but how they relate to each other.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think that there were certain kids of mine who needed things to almost be gamified when they were younger. And it I remember having this conversation, like, if you get all the balls into the bin, you get 100 points. Like 100 points meant nothing. It literally was not tied to a prize. But I had one son in particular and another one that was similar who would do things for points, even though the points didn't mean anything.
It's so fascinating. People are so interesting. Yes.
And those two kids, by the way, also would rate my dinner and rate like the job I did on like cleaning the kitchen. So it was like, it basically went back and forth, but we all had a good sense of humor about it. So what would work with getting those kids to do something for me is completely different than the kid who wants to do something just to get along and be a good citizen or for the satisfaction of a job well done. No, not all kids are ever going to care about the satisfaction of a job well done. It's just not how it is. Some want the praise, some want the affirmation, some need to have their hands held. And I guess I'm willing to do whatever I have to do for us all to cohabitate as peacefully as possible. So I definitely change things up based on the kid. And you're right that as they all equal out, as they even out age-wise, it just becomes more stark. The fact that you're doing it differently for every kid, but I treat my friends differently. I treat my siblings differently.
Yeah. It all makes sense. And I think sometimes we get locked into this, like, I have to treat my kids equally. Mm-hmm. And, I think there's a difference between sort of being equitable and then doing exactly the same thing because when you're dealing with two different personalities, doing this exact same thing for each person just doesn't make sense. And I think we know that on some basic level, but still it can get confusing. And sometimes kids, push our buttons on that stuff.
I think that it's like a quote I heard one time, and I think it was related to marriage, but I think it applies here, is that, everybody giving their all or being equitable isn't about two people giving 50-50. It's about two people giving 100% of whatever it is they have to give. Mm-hmm. And so if you know that all of your kids, and let's be honest, maybe with your kids, it's more like 90%, but if you know that everyone is doing what they can to the best of their abilities and that you're communicating with each of them to the best of your ability to communicate with each of them in the way that works for them, then it might not always look like everyone doing their quote fair share unquote. And that's life. I mean, it's not. Fairness doesn't exist always when you're dealing with fairness, the way we look at it, where there's a pie and there's a certain number of slices and all the slices are the same size, is not how family life works.
Yeah. Yeah. Which sort of brings up another topic for me, which is that notion with older siblings of really having to step back as a parent and give them space to work things out with each other. Mm-hmm. And, at this point, when they're older, they have their own ways of communicating that may not match up with the way you communicate or I communicate. And they really do, at this point, need to craft that relationship. They need to, because, one of them's going to move out soon enough. Yeah. Like, they need to have a relationship that's not, that doesn't use you as the center point all the time. And so I think that's really important to give them that space.
Their relationship will outlive yours. It's more important, I think.
Man, you made me almost cry with that one.
But I mean, it really is true.
Yeah, of course it is.
In 50 years, unless, you could still be around in 50 years, Asha, but I don't think you're going to be helping them navigate their adult relationships then, right? Yeah. So this has to exist on its own. I actually think this was something I was very fortunate to kind of default into with a bigger family. When my kids were little, we definitely had house rules. Like, there's a certain tone you are not allowed to take with me or with anybody else. There are words you do not use to your brother. You don't call him stupid. Like, the, you know, those kinds of things. We don't say shut up, like things like that. Other than that, I was not checked out, but I was busy. And I couldn't be there for every dynamic. Like, I couldn't be there to oversee every interaction. And I think that my kids kind of had to figure it out for themselves. They had like these very basic guidelines as a starting point, which, by the way, they didn't always obey. And I know that when I was out of the room, they said shut up and called each other stupid. But it was like anything that mom's going to catch, like may catch wind of, it better like look a certain way. And I think that did spill over. And then I think that they just kind of had to work it out for themselves. And are they all equally close? No. But I know they all enjoy each other's company. And they all, to some degree, enjoy spending time together. And they have a really strong family dynamic. Like, they really see themselves as special, like the Starks and the, you know, like the Game of Thrones. Like, I really think that they see themselves as a very different and special unit. And so regardless of how each individual relationship is, like what state it's in at any given time, I feel good about that part. Because that's what I think will carry them through a lot of those conflicts that they're going to have. It's going to happen.
Sure, sure. Oh, so that's, I have heard a similar story from, you know, friends who have bigger families. There's a certain, energy that can only exist with that many people that just doesn't exist when there's a smaller number of people in the family. And again, as a person who grew up without siblings, this is all new to me even now. And I think that is actually a gift of having a larger family from what I've heard from friends as well.
Yeah.
You know, like at a certain point you can't handle all that stuff. They've got to handle it on their own. And there's a beauty to that.
There is. And I think that, you know, it just shows that every family size has its upsides and its downsides, right? Because I remember very specifically thinking, I wish I had time and space to be more intentional. And if I had two kids, I could do that. But with five, I have to kind of like give them some guidelines and then let them go at it. And so it's just two different ways to get to the same goal, I guess.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And the flip side of that is sometimes, you know, with two kids, I would wish that I didn't feel so involved in every single thing that was going on between them.
Yeah.
And so it's a funny thing like that. And, you know, which is funny, too, because I think it's worth noting that this is temporary because eventually these older kids start leaving the house. It's funny when you're talking about your 21-year-old coming and going. I'm like, he is a literal adult, like literal adult.
Literal adult.
Mine's almost adult. Yours is a literal adult. And I think it's worth talking about that space that's created when older kids leave. And there was a point where you went from five kids to four kids in the house or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I now have one kid in the house. And so where my son got 3 years of alone time, almost 4 years of alone time with us as a baby, my daughter's getting that time with us as a teenager. And oh my gosh, how fascinating a time this is. I think it's worth just for those of you who have multiple kids, it's just worth noting that this space lives somewhere in your future, and it's really fascinating.
It is. And you know, I have to say, so I have not yet experienced that, right? I still have multiple people in my house most of the time. But one thing I think is interesting, so my 21-year-old lives here, and my three youngers, because my ex and I divorced, my three youngers are with their dad half the time, and my 21-year-old does not leave most of that time. So he's here. I mean, he's working and stuff, but he's around. So now we almost have, so I had 2 years with him just by himself when he was the baby. And now for 3 days of the week, I often have time with just him again, or sometimes the 19-year-old will come back during that time because he knows just his closest age brother is here and they'll hang out. So sometimes it's just me and the two of them. It's interesting. Like, it just, everybody relates differently. I find it interesting how, and I'm saying this like quietly because he's like in the next room, how needy my 21-year-old sometimes is when the younger siblings are gone. Like, he misses them and kind of has this, I don't know, like, is asking when they'll be home, when they'll be home and stuff. So it's just, I don't know, like, it does create space. But right now for me, it's all over the place. Like, people are coming and going. And so my life, like, who I'm spending time with on any given day could look totally different than who I'm spending time with the next day, which is so different from the life I had for all those years where it was five little humans in my face constantly.
Just like the amount of human energy in one 24-hour period.
It's a much quieter energy now, and I find myself looking forward to times, like little pockets of quiet time I get with this or that kid because, you know, or even like my 15-year-old might happen to be here on a day the siblings are with his dad because maybe he had a driver's ed or something. And so he's going to stay with me that night. So it might be just me and him. And like, it's a surprise. I don't even always know what's going to happen. And it's cool, but like, it's a little, it's like, instead of having all the chaos all the time, just getting used to it, it's kind of like these little pockets of surprises, which I enjoy, but I'm like less used to now. So yeah.
Well, and I think the other thing is that it's not just, you know, there's this sort of logistical space, meaning there are fewer mouths to feed, fewer people to keep track of in terms of, you know, plans and logistics and the car and all that stuff. There's also this emotional space, this emotional sort of roller coaster, which is that, you know, the dynamics with one person may really change. It's sort of funny when you talk about your 21-year-old feeling a little bit like, where is everybody?
Right.
You know, like, there is a certain way that a family works when everyone's around, and when everyone's not around, it works differently. And so that's also just something to sort of just make a note of and be prepared for. And it's cool. Like, it is what it is. You know, it's good.
Yeah, it is good. And you're about to see now how that will change back. I'm so curious for the summer.
I too am very curious, and I've been thinking a bit, like, what does it look like to be you know, a parent who still needs to set some boundaries with a person who is an adult and who is in the house not as a guest. This is his home, but not exactly like it was before. What does that look like? I mean, it's all new. And so I definitely am going to be trying to follow my own advice as much as I can, which is to sort of like take stock in the moment and just try to adjust as it happens. You know, I just remembered a book that I really want to mention before we finish up this conversation. And of course, I didn't write down the author's name, but it's a really old book called Siblings Without Rivalry. That was a great book that I read years ago.
Is it like Adele Faber-ish or something like that?
Yeah,
Adele Faber. Okay, it's two women. Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch.
Okay,
I just made Fablish into a name.
Okay, that's the thing. I almost said Adele Fablish, but it's not. It's Maslisch and Faber. Thank you for saying that, because they wrote Siblings Without Rivalry,
which is a great book.
It's a fabulous book. And they also wrote How to Talk So Kids Will Listen
and
How to Listen
So
Kids Will Talk. And that actually echoes back to something I said at the beginning of this episode, which is that whole notion of reflecting back to kids what you hear them saying to you. I think that was a technique I picked up in that book.
Yes, so, that was from How to Talk So Kids Will Listen So Kids Will Talk. I definitely remember that, using that as a Bible of sorts when my kids were becoming verbal. Yeah,
I feel like those two books really helped with the sibling transition, with just the whole, you know, sort of being a parent of siblings thing.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear how this all plays out. And I will tell you that as I've had kids leave my house and come back after months and months being gone, and there are things you don't even know annoyed you.
I've heard it's not always easy.
Going to suddenly be very clear, like, oh, that is the kid. What's interesting is when one leaves, you realize what that kid always did that drove you nuts, but you didn't know which kid was doing it. So like, which kid is it that always pees on the seat in my house? I have a lot of boys. Or which kid is it who always puts the peanut butter knife like on the edge of the sink and it gets peanut butter everywhere, or whatever it is. And so I can now identify, because my two oldest have both left and come back, I can identify who it is who leaves the Afghan on the sofa all messed up, like the throw blanket. I know who that is now. And yeah. I've got my eye on that person, right? So there's just like a little list, like a little annoyance list that sometimes those shifting people coming and going, it makes it clearer. You start to have more information than you had before.
Okay, so. Megan, you gotta let me have my fantasy, okay? Like right now, my little fantasy is my son's coming home. I miss him. It's going to be so awesome. And it will. And also, all those things are going to happen. You know, if it's anything based on, you know, I have neighbors whose kids are older than mine. And so there were definitely some times when I would run into some of those neighbors, you know, during the summer, like on the sidewalk or whatever. And I'd say, oh, so-and-so's home. How's it going? And they would sort of look at me. Their eyes would sort of widen and go, it's
good.
It's interesting is what they would say. And I realized,
My guess is you will love the first few minutes or the first few months, and then by August you'll be ready for him to go again, and that is how it should be,
and he will probably be ready to go as
exactly. Well, this has been
fun. Check in with me.
Yeah, let's check in like in the fall and see how things are going, because I'm very curious. But this has been really fun. And again, if you guys want to, we can link up that book in the show notes. It'll be episode 212 at themomhour.com. But definitely check out Asha's podcast that she does with Christine Coe. It's called Edit Your Life. And we will have that also linked up in the show notes. But you can find Edit Your Life anywhere podcasts are found. Asha, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. I feel like I learned something from you, actually. This has been great.
I learned a ton today as well. So we will talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Sarah. Don't forget to check out my conversation with Christine Coe on Edit Your Life later this week. Just head to edityourlifeshow.com or look for Edit Your Life wherever you listen to the Mom Hour.